Doing your holiday shopping at the mall can also feel like you're getting your finger and toenails ripped right out. That's why Amazon.com is there to make your holiday shopping as painless as possible. Check out all of the Cyber Monday and 12 days of Christmas deals going on all December long with our link, robisawebsite.com/Amazon, or for our friends in Canada, robisawebsite.com/AmazonCA. Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who will just podcast with anybody 5 minutes after meeting them. I'm Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. Very excited for a special episode, a recap of episode number 12 with an in-studio guest. Please welcome back to the podcast, Shireen Asqui.
Close enough.
How do you really say it? I feel like we've probably done this 5 times.
Yeah, the Persian way is Asqui.
Asqui.
And I just tell people Asqui.
Asqui. Okay. All right. So here we are. You're back here in the studio. And this is the first time that you're back here in the studio since the summer, or the last one was during Koh Rong.
It was when Scott was booted because Ty didn't do the thing with the idol.
Yes. And so officially the last time you were back was for Survivor Koh Rong. And so very excited to have you here to talk about a very exciting another week in Survivor Millennials versus Gen X.
Yeah, I'm very excited about it. I'm a huge Adam fan. And so it's exciting to be able to, you know, talk about such a good episode for him.
Good episode. Great episode. Great. I said such a slam dunk for him to get the fishy last night.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Said,
like, no one's even close.
No contest for anybody else. Although when I watched the episode, I didn't know that Will had voted against. I thought that he had voted against Hannah.
Yeah, I'm not one to speak all that highly of Will all the time, but I will say, underreported story, he flushed an idol. He got what he wanted. He voted out Zeke and he flushed an idol.
How do you think that's going to be looked at? People will say, like, oh, the great job, Will, or...
No, I think that Adam is still going to look good because Adam looks like he read the vote correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the argument for Adam still playing it is that, like, he couldn't rely on Will.
Yeah.
So it was still a good play.
Yes.
And I think that Adam is going to get all the positivity from it, like, with the people as well as with the viewing audience.
Okay, so we're off to the races here. We're like a minute into this. We're getting heavy into the episode. And I haven't even mentioned my exit interview with Zeke, which is up. Very fun to talk to Zeke today.
Everybody go listen to this exit interview.
Yes. Did you listen to it?
No.
Okay. But so you will even go listen to it. I will take your own advice and listen to it later.
Yeah, for sure.
No, Zeke, very good. Shot out of a cannon. Boom, boom, boom. Yeah. Lots of great answers to the questions. He was ready to go.
Yeah.
Know-it-alls with Steven last night. Very fun to get into everything. And then voicemails coming up with Mike Bloom today.
Yeah.
Jam-packed Survivor Thursday.
It's a good day.
It's a good day. All right. So why don't we let's catch up. How are you doing? Everything good?
Everything's good. Yes. I was just in Europe for a couple of weeks. I went to London and Berlin.
London and Berlin.
Yeah.
Just on
vacation.
Vacation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Had a great time. Just got back. Two days ago.
Or you went with friends?
I went with friends.
Yes.
I went with my college best friend for most of it and then met up. I actually did like the... I don't know if this is like, if it sounds bad. Like one of my best friends is gay and lives in London.
Okay.
And like all of our like gay guy friends were there. And so I had like a like gay guy night in London.
Yes.
That was like.
Good.
Best thing.
Yes.
So much fun.
And what do you do on gay guy night in London? Is it dinner? Is it clubbing?
No. So first we went to drag trivia night.
Drag trivia night.
Yeah. At a place called Duck and Rice.
Yes.
We won.
Yes.
My trivia team won. And then after that, we went and got champagne and drank a lot.
Are the people asking the questions in drag or is it questions about drag?
So I thought it was going to be questions about drag, but it was actually just a drag queen hosting the night.
Okay.
And she asks trivia, like normal trivia questions. About like the world, a lot of US questions, even though it was in London, which I think gave us the edge because we were the only Americans there.
Yes. Okay.
but yeah, no. So then after that, we went out to dinner and like drank a lot of champagne and stuff. And then we went out, to like a gay club.
Gay club. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And, fun was had by all.
Fun was had by all.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. All right. So, and hopefully fun is had here today. I can't see how it's not. And always fun when you come here and join us on the podcast. I always appreciate you coming out here in the studio.
Yeah, I love being here because, I mean, I just really love Nicole.
Oh, to be honest. Yes. You were peppering Nicole with questions about the season. A lot of times, you know, people come in and then they want to sort of like run stuff past Nicole. I recall, Aris at some point, at one point was just like, you know, really, but Nicole, like, really, what do you think about this? And, she's often ill prepared to, you know, she's not ready for that.
Yeah. But what I like about Nicole is I love hearing who she loves and even more so, I love hearing who she doesn't like.
But I feel like her, like, instinct is say, oh, I hate that person.
Yeah. And I love.
And I have to say, what, you didn't even watch the show. Why do you hate this person?
Yeah, but I
just do.
I think it's so telling, though. That's what I love. Because like because she can't like make up details for why she doesn't like somebody. She can actually say like, I just don't like them because of like these first impression kind of reasons. And I think that's important. I think that especially in Survivor, so many relationships like.
Right.
Come off of that first impression.
What I'm hoping for is at some point, some guest comes here and asks Nicole, what do you think of Rob? And she will just like, oh, I hate him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why? Why? He seems like a good guy. I just don't like him. I can't even say. There's something about him. I don't like it.
I mean, she did say that Dominic is like mini Rob.
Yes. So she likes him.
I feel like her love for Dominic will keep her love for you strong.
Yes. Okay.
She sees Dominic in you now.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's not get too far off path because we're going to need a psychologist in here to explain the dynamic of all of this. But all right. So millennials versus Gen X.
Yeah.
Good season. Great season.
As
a historian of all of these things.
As a historian. I like it. I don't love it.
Yes.
I enjoy some episodes.
So I have been very high on this season, especially I felt like it really started off slow. I think that pre-swap, I feel like there's only one good episode there. And I think that then since the swap, I think it's been really good. And especially post-merge. Why are you not as high on it?
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm right there with you. I agree with you. I didn't like the post-merge I didn't like the pre-merge as much. Post-merge, basically the further into the game we get, I like it more and more, but we're rushing through the end of it. I wish we rushed through the beginning more and like, and you know, stretched out the post-merge stuff more because generally the post-merge is more interesting anyway, better gameplay, and you're more invested in these characters. And because there's so much going on with this particular cast post-merge, I loved the double episode last week. I really liked the episode last night. I was sobbing the whole time. what do I not love about this season? I don't love a lot of people on the cast. I don't think that like the cast is that explosive. I think there are a few good characters, but there aren't many. Like compared to last season, there were many great characters. Even, and I'm saying like they're people I don't personally like, but they're great TV.
Yeah.
Or compelling TV.
Most people have said the opposite. That compared to last season, that there are more characters here.
I mean, I disagree. I think, I think Brett is like decent. I don't necessarily like Brett, but I think he's pretty good TV, but he's also like invisible a lot of the time. Sunday, like, I don't know who's Sunday. I don't know. It's a day of the week. Will's also been invisible all season. He's finally coming alive now. And it's a little bit more fun now with him. But also, like, I question casting an 18-year-old. I don't question casting an 18-year-old. I question casting an 18-year-old with so little life experience. Like, give me an inner-city hustler 18-year-old who's been around the block, who's, like, gonna come, like, you know, with emotional machine guns and, like, and, you know, maybe be a disaster and maybe go far. But, like, has more experience.
That's a good point. And, you know, I've been a little protective of Will this season because I feel like, hey, you know, he's 18 years old. But you make a good point in terms of if you say somewhere the decision is made, or I don't know if it's reverse engineered of, hey, wouldn't it be great to have an 18-year-old with these millennials? Let's go out and find an 18-year-old. Or if they found Will and said, okay, he's the guy, we need him on the season. And I don't know necessarily, you know, what is unique to his story other than I'm in high school.
Yeah.
You know, it's almost like that his story is I'm more of an every kid or a 18-year-old out there as opposed to a, you know, a exemplary, that there's something unique and special about this 18-year-old.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. But you articulated exactly my thoughts.
Yeah. Let me just go back to something that you said earlier in terms of like, it would be great if we were like fast forwarding through more of the stuff in the beginning that wasn't as good to get here. I just wonder if they were so gun shy after, or maybe gun shy is the snake bit after last season, where they had 18 people and they lost 3 due to medevacs. And then the end of the season turned out to be kind of a drag where you ended up having sort of like a bunch of episodes where, you know, probably final 6 or so things started to really, the pacing slowed down where you're going to lose, you know, I don't know over how many days that was, but we had the opposite problem last season.
Yeah, but I think
we had our final 6 with, you know what, 3 episodes to go.
Right. But you have, when you have 20 people to begin with, that's 2 extra people that can quit or be medevaced or whatever pre-merge without really impacting the pacing as much. Plus, we've got a 10 person jury. I mean, I just think that like if you did plan at least to blow through more episodes in the beginning.
Yeah. I think in a perfect world, a double tribal council pre-merge, I think that that's probably the solution to this. I think it's just like, but you're worried about that. Well, what if we have a medical evacuation now at this point? What if we have 2 medical evacuations?
But with 20 people, 2 medical, 3 medical evacuations, it doesn't matter. Now you're going from a 10 person jury to a normal sized 8 person.
It's almost like this got screwed up by nobody getting medically evacuated. Not that we want that for anything, but it's like that if it's like, you know, it's almost unheard of. Like, I feel like that we've had a lot of, you know, going back to, we had 3 last season. We had, you know, Terry have to leave the game. Was there anybody else that was a non-traditional evacuation just going back to in Worlds Apart, did we lose anybody during it? Okay. And then in San Juan del Sur, Julie quit. So, you know, it's almost like that it's probably at this point, you know, reasonable to assume you're going to lose somebody by some non-traditional method anyway.
Yeah. But again, like on an 18 person season, that's a valid concern. On a 20 person season, especially because they clearly plan to have this massive jury. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Are you not in favor of the massive jury?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
I think it makes each jury member less valuable and less compelling. And that's it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. We had the 10-person jury from Second Chance, and it was a 10-0 vote. It'll be interesting to see how the final 3 shakes out. If we tend to find that a bigger jury just tends to go in the direction of the tone is set, and then people end up going in a certain way.
Yeah, and I was also going to say, like, I think it's like less compelling TV at the finale, at Final Tribal Council, to have so many people get up and ask a question or give a speech or whatever. It's, it's too much. And you're right. And I do think that like when you have that many people in Ponderosa, you have like the influence dynamics are very different.
Okay. Well, let's go back to this episode in particular last night and the downfall of Zeke. Did you feel like at the time that Zeke went went too hard, too fast when he decided to make a play and vote out Chris?
No, I mean, I think Chris was out of his hands. I think it was going to be Chris or Jessica. And he, you know, he just had to choose a side. And I was okay. Given the fallout, I was okay with the side that he chose because I didn't know Brett was going to like come right back to camp and say like how honestly, like I think it's so lucky and like and it speaks volumes of Brett and Zeke, both as players, that Brett was willing to come back, swallow his pride and say, whatever, I'm not offended that you voted out Chris. Like, I still want to work with you. Let's make this happen. And that they were able to have like build a much deeper bond with Chris out of the picture. Because I thought that when he voted out Chris, oh, Brett and Sunday are going to, now be out for revenge. This is like Paul 2.0, where like their ally was voted out. But that wasn't the case at all. And so I think he chose correctly. I think the real question is like, was he too aggressive in going for David? But the fact that David was coming for him, again, I think the answer is no.
Do you think that they could have mended those fences between David and Zeke? That I was talking about this a lot last week on the podcast, where people are adversaries. Can that, those bonds, especially when they're not bonds from that there's been like some personal disagreement, but bonds over strategy have been broken?
Yeah, I think that the story there is, I think if David and Zeke can come together and say, hey, look, we've now both been outed as the biggest threats in this game. Everyone's coming for both of us. If it's me this week, it's you next week, vice versa. So what we need to do here is we need to come back together, pull together each of our most loyal allies and make like a new, I'm not using that new voting block
word. You don't want to say trust cluster?
No.
No, why? You're anti, you're an anti-trust cluster?
Trust cluster.
No, you don't like it. You seem like visibly upset.
I am.
Why? You just say you hate the idea or you hate the name, the branding?
I think that every single time somebody invents a new phrase, it just means the exact same thing. It means alliance. These are all just different shifting alliances.
You don't even like voting blocks.
I think voting block is the same thing as alliance.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with voting block because the term voting block already existed, meaning exactly what we're discussing it as.
Yes.
I think, you know, trust cluster and whatever else these other words that people are trying to push to make happen, like, is... It's a bit much.
It's a bit much. All right. That in my interview with Zeke, where he said that the biggest problem for him, the biggest thing he did not anticipate happening was he didn't think Hannah was going to flip on him. Yeah. Going back to last week, he thought Hannah was voting with them going into the tie vote. He also thought, you know, did not foresee that she would pick David over him.
Oh, yeah. This is what I was going to comment upon with Zeke's game, because I do think he was really aggressive, but I liked his aggressiveness throughout. I think the problem with his comes down more to his style. I think that he, like, if you watch the way that he approaches people, he dictates a vote. He doesn't like collaborate on a vote. And when you're doing that, when you're the guy like walking up to people saying like, no, we're not going to do Ken because David will play David will play an idol on him now. We're doing Hannah, right? And like, he's the one who's always calling the shot and telling people what it is. And and that's what I think is too aggressive and too forward. Wait, where was I going with that? Oh, the Hannah thing. And but I think
do you relate to that?
Yes and no. I think so sometimes I'm like that. Let me give you like a restaurant example. When you come to my sushi restaurant with me, like, I'm taking the menu out of your hand and saying like, okay, like, what are your food restrictions or whatever? What do you like? What do you
this is your favorite sushi restaurant, or you own the sushi restaurant?
No, my favorite one.
Okay.
Where I'm like a regular and I'm bringing you with me. I'm going to take your stuff into account, like your preferences into account, but I'm going to order for you because you don't know what to order at my sushi restaurant.
What if I'm with Jonas?
But he also doesn't know my sushi restaurant.
Okay.
I know my sushi restaurant really well.
Okay.
But when I go to, when I come to LA and, you know, and I'm going to eat with you.
When you come to my podcast studio, you say you want a salad from my California chicken cafe. And I say, let's get the Chinese chicken salad.
Yeah, I'm on board. And you, I think you see firsthand that I was like, yeah, I'm down. I trust you.
Yes. The Chinese chicken Morris salad.
Yeah. Because I think moves are about, damn. I think people need to let other people lead at different points to feel like equals. And I think making a move is when you decide something that I disagree with. I don't want that Chinese chicken salad. I don't know that I want to tell you that. And so now I'm going to go behind your back and...
Wait, do you really not want it?
No, I do want
it. Okay, it's very good. Trust me.
Yeah, I'm still in your trust cluster.
Yes.
For now.
And I hope I'm feeling that I'm recommending, but if you told me that I don't even want that chicken salad, then I'm open to hearing what you want to do.
Right. And like, I would also hope that we're close. You want to get to a place where you're close enough to say, you know, I don't like sesame seeds.
Okay. I think I understand what you're saying. If we're not mixing up the metaphor and we're not actually still talking about the lunch order.
But that's so, and then to bring it back full circle. This is why I think Hannah was rubbed the wrong way by Zeke and why she called him condescending. we never really saw him be condescending to her, but what we did see was him feeding her strategy and telling her what to do. And I think that gets to be overbearing when you're an intelligent young woman like Hannah.
So let me bring this back to Will, because we also heard Will say, "Nobody is listening to me." And I'm trying not to do the same exact voice as Ken. It's very hard for me, Shireen. It's,
yeah. I mean, Ken.
I feel like I could do.
One is like the crash test dummies voice. And then the Ken voice.
I feel like Will is more like, "Well, my mom thinks that I'm cool." I feel like that. But Ken is more like, "So tell me about how your mom." No. Yeah.
Ken is Blue Steel.
Blue Steel.
He does that voice.
Yes.
That's the, well, what's that guy's? The Zoolander voice.
Zoolander.
Thank you.
That Zoolander.
One. Do the Zoolander voice. That's Ken.
See, I feel like the Zoolander is actually a higher voice.
But like that intonation, those, you know, that like way of speaking,
yes,
with a slightly lower.
Yeah.
Do
yeah.
that.
All right. Well, anyway, let me let Will actually talk for himself, because I want to play for you a scene from the CBS secret scenes that are on YouTube. And so Will is talking through what his plan is. Zeke mentioned this in my exit interview with him, but I want to play it for you and get your take on whether Will actually has a good idea that was poorly executed.
No, I'm good, man. Thanks.
Here's the thing, Hannah. I'm tired of not getting the respect I deserve. I think you are too.
Yeah.
So, I call it the pendulum strategy.
Okay.
We go back and forth, and we get Zeke out tonight.
Okay.
David out the next night.
Okay.
Jay out the night after.
Yeah, those are the threats.
I'd rather go down swinging than being dragged to the end.
I have the same feeling. As someone who's on the bottom, not only am I down for a big move, but I really like this plan. Maybe we can trick some of these people that are a little older and a little wiser.
Exactly.
I need to do something to get back in the game. So if Will wants to try to get out the power players, starting with Zeke, then I am down.
Great. Now, after watching that, I feel like, okay, Will doesn't seem so kooky anymore.
No, I never thought that he was kooky. I thought that his whole plan to flip on Zeke in the first place was a great idea. And I think he got really, I think though his fatal mistake, his stick with the plan moment was telling Ken, they're voting for you.
Yeah. And let's talk that through in a moment. But just okay. In terms of like, it seems like that Will and Hannah are a pair in this. And I didn't see that in the episode.
No, and I think it was last week when he first went to Zeke and said, "Hey, like I'm jumping off the J ship and I'm going to be with you, Zeke." He also said, he actually said in that scene, "I'm going to be with you, Zeke, and Hannah." Like, so he clearly felt sort of close to both of them and then, you know, fell out on Zeke's side. But the other thing is, I think he is objective enough to go after the, like, Hannah was the correct person to approach with that plan, regardless of whether or not they had a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Hannah, I mean, I go by based on in the confessional, what she's saying, she's not saying like, "Hey, Will has this crazy plan. If it gets out Zeke, I'm all on board," but she makes it seem like, "Hey, this is good. I need to be making a move and we need to be going along with this."
Yeah. And she's right, because I don't think that people respect her all that much. And I think that this is a kind of a plan. I mean, people don't seem to respect Will that much. They don't seem to respect Hannah that much. They don't seem to respect even Adam that much. And I think that so those three people need to get together and do this kind of a thing and take out, you know, other people who are the bigger threats.
I mean, so do you like this sort of like, do you think that this would work where, okay, so that Will and Hannah are voting against Zeke at this vote, and then Will and Hannah are going to vote against David at the next one? Hannah's going to vote out David next?
I don't know that.
Or did the plan just get completely blown up at this point?
I mean, it's hard to say like where that fit in with the Ken situation. I also think that it seems like,
I think it's before. I think that we have to assume that that's from before.
Yeah. So the Ken situation probably impacts Will's thinking a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Probably spooks him a bit. I also think that Hannah is like weirdly close with David. So I don't know if she'd be willing to vote out David, but you know, you have to assume that she probably is.
Yeah.
And but the thing is, I don't think the two of them can do it alone.
Yes.
I think they need a couple more people, at least like closer, if not in that inner circle with them.
Let's just talk about from a big picture perspective, this idea of this pendulum strategy and Zeke.
Swinging.
Yeah. Zeke sort of put the blame on me for this and sort of this idea of, OK, this person is the big threat. Let's vote them out this week. Let's vote this next person out this week. Let's vote this person out this week. And, you know, sort of like consciously like flipping back and forth. I just think it's hard to just like draw it up in the sand that way. I think sometimes that's what happens, but I think it's really hard to sort of, I know in the Amazon where we sort of, this kind of did happen, but it wasn't my plan really from the time that it started happening.
Yeah. No, and I pick up what you're putting down and I agree with you. I think that the thing is, people like me and people like Will and Hannah, like people who are big fans of the show, saw you in the Amazon and saw, wow, like that. And then the immediately following season, Johnny Fairplay did the same thing. And he said that he modeled it after your game. We see that gameplay and that's our ideal gameplay. That's the game that like I really wanted to be able to play. You know, fast forward to Cambodia, Spencer got to play that game post-merge. Like he ended up doing it too. And what all three of you had in common was that you didn't script it. It happened organically and like it happened on a more day-to-day basis. And I think that, you know, Will is more, and I think I fell into this trap a bit too. Like you try to plan too much and you just can't plan that far ahead.
The person who I think did it and actually pulled it off, I mean, besides Tony, I think if you go back to Karamoan and go back to Cochran, I think that there is a little bit of that where I think at the fine, I forget if it's at the final nine or the final 10, after Philip gets voted out, you have that big tribal council where, okay, oh, here's a big power player. Philip gets voted out. Actually, through no fault of Cochran, it was really that Malcolm and the Amigos ends up taking out Philip. Yeah. And then right after that, everybody then goes and votes out Malcolm. And then that power player is gone. And then it starts like a chain reaction where then, okay, now Cochran is going to flip against Andrea. And then it comes back and then they end up taking out Brenda. And so I do think that there was a little bit of, you know, switching back and forth, but it wasn't necessarily like one or two people doing it. It was a little bit more, you know, of he had Dawn with him the whole time, but then they were picking up other pieces along the way.
Right. I was going to say, I never interpreted it as Cochran himself being like this pendulum swinging back and forth. I saw it more as always like somebody then tried to make, like Andrea tried making a move. Even going back as far as starting with Corinne,
right.
She tried making a move, pendulum swung that way.
Yeah.
Then, you know, whatever. Then Malcolm's move got out Philip, pendulum swung that way. But then, you know, we need to take out Malcolm because he's like this threat and did this thing. Pendulum. Andrea's trying to making a move.
Right.
Pendulum.
And if we had Cochran here and we gave him truth serum, I don't know if he'd be able to say that that was, you know, his plan from like coming into the merge or anything like that. It just, you know, evolves that way.
Yeah. And I think, and so I guess my point there is like, unlike you and Johnny Fairplay and Spencer, I don't think that there was a person or a, like a small group of people driving. I mean, in a sense, you know, Cochran and Dawn were at the center of that swing, but I don't think they were the ones driving it. I think the people driving it were the people who got voted out. Like by trying to make a move, they got voted out.
Right. In the Amazon, I remember thinking about it sort of like where you had a three votes in a row where, you know, or even going back to Roger, that the person, it was, I compared it to like Lord of the Rings and Schmeagol and the Precious, where the person who thought that they were now like, I have all the power, I'm running the show now, that person kept getting kicked out. And I think that maybe we might see something like that, but it wasn't necessarily by design of any one player saying that, okay, whoever thinks that they're the person in power, we're going to take them out. And these are what the next three moves are going to be.
Yeah.
So I think that for it, there's a little bit of a difference between watching it on TV and being an outsider and then being in the mix. I mean, if we had Tony here, I don't think that he'd be able to say that he was planning that many moves down the road. It was just sort of like, okay, figure out this one, you know, figure out how do you get out of this spot? How do you get out of this one?
Yeah.
And so I think that maybe you can sort of like have a idea of who needs to go next. But I mean, I think that Big Brother seasons go like this a lot as well.
Oh, where they're more fluid?
Yeah, I think it's like sort of like, and a lot of times that, you know, these big brother seasons can be sort of like a war of attrition, or this or like somewhat like big, like super alliance in the middle. And, you know, whoever gets the most powerful is getting picked off from like round to round. But it's not necessarily like anybody like sort of like, okay, then this person goes home, then this person goes home, then this person goes home. Where Survivor, I think that, and I love these seasons where it's sort of like, where it's sort of crazy as opposed to one side just picks off the other side.
Yeah.
It's hard to sort of like be a, like a smaller group and say, okay, this is who we're picking off next.
Yeah.
It just sort of happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll say that is something that I do appreciate about this season, is that it is like a fluid season where people are willing to flip. And one of the things I worry about in the next couple of, tribals is that we're now distilling down to more solid groups of people that won't flip on each other. And I hope it's not like that. I always have a hope that everyone deep down is willing to flip on just about anybody to make the ideal move in the end. And, you know, to Will's credit, I love that he was willing to flip here. I like, you know, good on him as an 18-year-old to be able to do that. We've seen, you know, like wasn't Natalie Tenorelli like 18 years old or something? Yeah. I mean, like classic example.
18 or 19.
Classic example of somebody who, I think everyone in life I feel like, we are trained to just like take the easiest path and to like go with the momentum and to not stop and flip. And, like breaking up is hard to do, right?
Yeah.
As the song goes.
Yeah. Well, and I have to give, you know, Will credit in that way where Natalie was more resigned to say, okay, here's Boston Rob. He knows what he's doing. Let me follow him down to the end.
Yeah.
And hey, if I get to the end, this is, you know, a really big accomplishment for me. And I feel like that, you know, even Julia last season, I felt like was more willing to, you know, make a big move. I think you've seen two seasons in a row where a very young person is coming out there and saying, hey, I'm going to lose by being aggressive as opposed to be passive and potentially get dragged to the end.
Yeah. And and as a viewer, I prefer seeing somebody being more aggressive than the passive play. And I remember, like, I was on a season where, you know, where there was a pagonging and where everybody was passive and everybody just assumed, like, nobody was willing to examine their true position within that massive alliance. And so as a player also, it's, I think it makes for bad TV and it makes, for, you know, bad gameplay as well.
Yeah. A little bit of mateship going on in Worlds Apart.
Mateship.
Yes. The Australian Survivor term. I have another Australian Survivor question to ask you later, but, we'll get back to it. So, and then next week, what do you think is more likely to happen? Do you think that it's more likely to happen that everybody says, you know what, Will, we see what you're doing, that you're too much of a wild card, we're all going to vote you out here at the final eight? Or do you think that Will's plan potentially works out where then him and Hannah are together and they vote out David, or something just totally off the map?
I think Will is going to be a huge target because of this flip.
Yes.
And but I also think, you know, David is still going to be a big target. Jay is still a big target.
Mm-hmm.
I think those three are the ones that everybody's looking at taking out.
Yeah.
And especially now, like, you know, we've been wondering all along, how come they're not targeting Ken? Like, Ken seems like such a big threat. But I think last night sort of answers that question. I think that Ken does appear to be beatable at the end. Like, I think at home I was thinking, like, why is David going to the end with Ken? Like, is mateship that strong here?
Right.
But when you see what happened last night, it's like, oh, I think Ken is Andrew Savage.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's got this big integrity, loyalty, whatever thing going on.
Yes.
And I think though I just think that, you know,
Ken is certainly a shelter person and not a beach person, you would say.
But yeah.
Yes. No question about it.
Unquestionably.
Right. Because Will tried to talk to him. And, you know, Steven and I were getting into this last night about how, like, you know, that Ken talked about, like, you see, that's the power of having authentic relationships with people, that they give you legacy advantages just by having conversations with them. But you have to also be able to have the fast conversation of, hey, this is what we're doing tonight. I'm voting with you guys. Are we good? Are we solid? And you don't have time to really broker some sort of a, you know, summit about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. That's all there is. Yeah.
I mean, and that was a great accent, by the way.
Yes. Thank you.
Nailed it.
So in terms of Ken, you feel like that David is looking at him as, oh, I should definitely sit in the final three with that guy because he's not going to be able to speak. Like, he'll be coach in the final three.
I don't even think he's coach. I think he's he had shades of Rupert last night.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I forget the line.
Is he Andrew Savage or Rupert? Pick one Pearl Islands person and stick to it.
I mean, they're both kind of like, have you heard of like a horseshoe theory?
Like
you go around far enough on the other side and like they end up being back down close together.
Yes.
Like on the horseshoe.
Yes.
I mean, the thing that is in common with both of them is this idea of like integrity and I'm a good person and who the hell voted for me?
Yes. Okay.
And that's the shades of Rupert that I got from Ken last night when he was like, why would they vote for me?
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't make any sense.
So you feel like that Ken is actually a good final three pairing for David, because David could get up there and say, I came out here and I didn't know what I was doing, but I really, found myself and I did this in the game. I did made this move, made this move, made this move. And Ken is going to be playing the I was honest the whole time to everyone. I never broke my word. I had integrity. I treated people with respect to the whole game.
Yeah, and those people get like ripped apart in final tribal council. Oh, I guess that's your coach comparison.
Yes, yes.
But the difference was I think coach did actually control a lot of the game. And I think in this case, Ken didn't do shit.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say that on this podcast?
You could say that. I mean, did Ken make him? I'm trying to think of what Ken's biggest move in the game
Ken's
was.
Ken's biggest move was taking David, quote unquote, under his wing to steal credit for all of David's amazing moves because he's like so ridiculously good looking or whatever that people are so willing to ascribe David's moves to Ken. They're not Ken's moves. And like now that they're around Ken long enough, they see it for themselves very clearly.
Yeah. I mean, Ken has a really good shot of going all the way. I mean, and he has the legacy advantage. You like legacy advantage or no?
I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So how can I like it or not?
Okay. But the idea of, let's say it's an advantage in the, final five challenge.
Oh, that's okay.
It's okay.
I guess I don't like that Jessica gave it to him, though. I understand why.
I think what they were going for with the legacy advantage is like what happened to Adam in the game. Like, I think that what Survivor needs to do if they bring the legacy advantage back is they need to like publicly show somebody that, okay, here you go. Here's an advantage that you have, Shireen. And if you still have it on day 36, you have an advantage. And it's like, now I'm cursed. Now everybody's going to vote me out so that they get my advantage. But the problem is, I think that what production wants is that they want the person to have it. And then also like, you now have a target on your back. It's another reason to vote for you because you have this advantage in the game. But the fact that then it gets delivered in secret, but then they don't know who has it. I think the problem is that people just don't know it exists in the game. So Ken is the only person. He's not going to probably isn't going to blab about it. Mm-hmm. And so nobody is going to be voting out Ken because, hey, Ken has a secret advantage in this game. Just like, with, Steven's advantage, with Dan Foley's advantage, Ty.
But my qualm with the double vote advantages all the time was that it was public. I think that you can do way more interesting things with a double vote if nobody knows that you have it.
Right. But this legacy advantage, then it's almost like, what's the point of having it throughout the whole season? If people don't know about it, then it's just like, okay, here's a random person that they just are going to get an advantage because they found something on the floor. You know what I mean? You like it? You like the randomness?
Okay, yeah. I'm okay with it. Again, depending on what it ends up being, maybe I'll change my tune.
I mean, I like the fact that like Adam got this, dopey reward steal.
Yeah.
And people want to vote him out because he has this advantage. And I think it makes the game more exciting that he has this. And I feel like that the legacy advantage could have been that. But Jessica only told Ken, and now she's gone. Nobody even knew Jessica had it.
Yeah.
And then now Ken has it. It'd be fun, I think, if people wanted to vote out Ken so that they could steal it from him by voting him out.
Yeah, I mean,
you're very lukewarm. Not even tepid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Again, like if it ends up being like a double vote thing, then I don't like it because then it's like you're prescriptive about which tribal council you have to use the double vote. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't know, like I liked and disliked the Adam advantage. I wanted Adam's secret advantage to actually be the double vote. I wanted that one to be more powerful. Mm-hmm. The rewards deal, I think, as you've talked on the show, like it was said on the show, is a dopey. It's hurtful. It's like it actually doesn't help you much.
Well, let me ask, since we're talking about this with Adam, you know Adam, yeah. Okay? You've gotten to know him, outside of the context of the show. So you know more about him than anybody else that I've talked to.
Okay.
So do you feel like him giving the advantage to Jay was strategy, or was it just like from the bottom of his heart? Like, what kind of person is he? Is that, you think that is compassion, or was that strategy?
And this is speculation. I haven't talked to him about this.
Thank you.
But I believe that it's like truly both. I think, and so Adam is a brilliant guy. Mm-hmm. He was Phi Beta Kappa at Stanford. Basically, he got a 4.0 at Stanford.
Yes.
And in like a good major, not like remedial lunch. Like he's a legit guy.
Yes.
Like he's a really brilliant guy, I think. And he clearly also has like a big, you know, heart, like a lot of emotional capacity. And I think his inclination was probably to repay Jay in some way. But I also think there's no way this guy who's this brilliant doesn't also see all of the strategic benefits of.
Can it be both? Because let's say I'm giving, let's say I have like a some sort of like a cursed monkey's paw, and you do something nice for me. And I say, Shireen, I want to get that. Please accept this token of my appreciation. This cursed monkey's paw. I know I'm giving you something that's cursed.
Yeah, but
if I would truly had compassion for you and wanted to present you with a gift for like, Shireen, I'm so happy you came over here. Here's a Survivor Know-It-Alls poster.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder.
Yes.
And I think Jay saw a lot of value in that advantage.
Like, even if you say like, oh, wow, is that a monkey's paw? Like, actually, Shireen, trust me. You don't want this. You don't want that as your friend. You don't want this. This is going to make everybody want to vote you out.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Can it be both things?
It absolutely can be both things.
And I'm not saying anything bad about Adam in terms of if it was strategy, I would like that more. Yeah. I would be happier if you told me.
Yeah, no, I'm not strategy. Here's what I'm saying. I think that it was more strategy than it was emotion. I think that emotion also plays into it and makes it easier to make the strategic move. Mm-hmm. Like, because, okay, now let's say it was his idol, right? And
yes.
Like, and people knew that he even had the idol. I don't think he's giving his idol to Jay. No mm-hmm. way. Not for like taking him on this reward. I think it's like it's a throwaway thing. It's easy to give it away. He already got value out of it by being chosen for this thing. And it builds his relationship further with Jay, right? There are all kinds of good reasons for giving it to Jay. Plus, Jay sees it as a valuable thing. Jay does not see it as cursed. And that's in part because Jay is, one, really well respected by everybody in the game. And two, already really on the outs.
Yeah. And I love it as a strategic move.
Yeah,
it's a brilliant strategic move.
And so what I'm saying is, like, I think a lot of people maybe are inclined to say that, it was emotional. He was just paying him back. He's so, you know, such a good boy. And he is a total mensch. However, I think strategy was definitely at play here, too.
Okay. The move to save Hannah at Tribal Council, is that a good move?
Of two minds. Let me think this out loud. Okay. Or talk about this out loud.
As Steven said last night, he wasted an idol.
Yeah.
He used an idol when an idol was not necessary.
Yeah. But if you think about it this other way, Adam didn't have a whole lot of respect for most people now on the jury and left in the game. And the things that they think about him are also like, they're not him. Like they were calling him like untrustworthy and mm-hmm. these things. But he's actually like, he's super trustworthy. He's never said he's never spoken a bad word about anybody in his alliance, right? Like he seems to be like really reliable. And obviously he's a great ally and trustworthy because he played his idol for Hannah. He was willing to do that. But like, so here's the thing. He could have saved his idol to be, you know, more impactful down the line and probably more selfishly so as well. But by playing it now correctly, for Hannah, even though, I mean, correctly in terms of like he guessed the right person to play it for with enough people still left in the game mm-hmm. and like, and with the jury looking on. Now he's gained an incredible amount of credibility with everybody as a savvy game player. He's, I think, won back a lot of respect from people. And especially because he's shown that he, like when you're willing to play an idol for somebody else, you inherently look like a better person, like, and like a better ally.
Mm-hmm.
And so the very thing they were questioning him on was his, you know, trustworthiness and what kind of a teammate he is. This is the kind of teammate he is. He's the kind of teammate who, with, you know, like with an immunity necklace on, his butt's not on the line. He's throwing an idol down for his ally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he, and so even though he, like I said, he could have saved it down the line for more selfish reasons, but like in this case, I think now he's winning that credibility. His reputation is being mended by doing this.
You know, I always love to talk about, you know, how Survivor evolves from season to season. How much do you feel like Jeremy Collins, like saving Steven? Do you think that it is that sort of the moment that has really, you know, now we're seeing so many people end up playing idols for one another. I mean, people aren't playing idols for themselves. People are going up there. I mean, this season, David plays an idol on Jessica. Then David plays an idol on Kat. Adam plays an idol on Hannah that we're not seeing the person go up there and say, Jeff, I don't feel safe tonight. Here's the thing. Obviously, Kelly Wentworth saves herself with an idol in that same season. But I'm just wondering if that's something that sort of like has changed the way that the players are looking at the game. If we go back and take a look at when this season is filmed, they haven't seen Ko Rong, or they've seen a couple of weeks of Ko Rong. I think they went to go play this season like in the middle of Ko Rong.
Yeah.
They don't know Sia comes out on stage. That's why nobody's trying to save a chicken or anything like that this season. Yeah. So I just wonder how much do you think that that's what it is? Or do you think that that has just been the direction that we've been going where Natalie Anderson plays an idol on somebody else and San Juan del Sur? You know, obviously Tony and LJ both play idols on each other in Cagayan.
So I think that it all actually started with Russell.
Yes.
Quite frankly. Like, I think, especially in Heroes Villains, when Russell plays an idol for Parvati, everyone is blown away that somebody's willing to do that. And that wasn't even, I think, the first idol play for another person, but it's certainly the most memorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Parvati also that same season plays an idol.
And I think Parvati later that season only plays her idols for other people because Russell did it for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's like what gave her, I think it opened up minds. It's like the Roger Bannister effect.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
No.
It's like the first time, it turns out it's like not really a real thing, but what it refers to is the first
4 minute mile.
Yeah. Like when, like as soon as one person, like they people thought that there was no way humans were ever going to run a sub 4 minute mile. And the second, like the first man did it, suddenly a slew of people did it. And I think Russell doing that with his idol gives people the mental freedom and like the vision of, oh, you can play an idol for somebody else and they can totally benefit you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Parvati only plays for idols that season because Russell did it first for her.
Yeah.
And then I don't think the Jeremy idol play actually helps though, because I actually think the Jeremy idol play hurts in this scenario because Jeremy had two idols. So Jeremy plays one of his idols for somebody else because he had one to fall back on for mm-hmm. himself. Right.
Yeah.
So I will say that like the more people play idols for other people, the more it liberates people's minds to continue doing it. And I think that's why I think David, as you know, like a big fan of the show and also as a risk taker and a gamer
mm-hmm.
is those two. It's his personality combined with the history that enables David to play the idol on Jessica. Especially knowing he probably also knew that he was going to go back out there and have an easier time finding it again than everybody else because he knew the gimmick.
Yeah.
So that's why David does it. And then I think, again, like pure speculation, I think Adam plays his idol for Hannah because he's now seen David do it twice this season already.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees also like the goodwill and everything that it's bought David and like how now everybody has this immense amount of respect for David as a player. I think, and Adam also knowing the game really well and also thinking of like the history and also thinking of his current standing in the game, all of those things come together with, again, like a risk-taking personality. I think it ups Adam's risk-taking ability.
Yeah. This is all very interesting. I feel like that we need somebody to work on a research paper on all this, because I do feel like that there was a little bit of like even after Heroes vs. Villains, I feel like that the idea of the idol sort of gets, you know, you kind of don't want the idol for a little bit. You know, there's a little bit of like, oh, people that are out looking for the idol, this is a bad thing. We'll flush the idol, you know, following the, you know, returning player seasons of Rob and Russell. I feel like that the idol is not super impactful in One World. And I feel like that Malcolm comes along in 25 and 26. Yeah. And I think that he finds a lot of idols. And I feel like that he uses them more sort of like as self-defense. I feel like that he...
Oh, yes and no. Also, I think that in his first season, he did not use his idols like optimally.
Yes.
Because he should have used an idol on Abby Maria and right and gone to the end with her.
Mm-hmm.
And then he wins that season, hands down. But he didn't do that. He like sat on, I think, two idols, you know, that like didn't end up getting used. I forget, one or two, but by that point. But then he comes back his second season. And I think given what happened his first season, he's now willing to take more risk. He
plays two idols or right.
And he's willing to play his two idols for his two bros. Granted, that's also after Reynold showed willingness to play one for Malcolm.
Yes.
Again, seeing that somebody else is willing to play one for somebody else makes a person more willing to play it for somebody else. Mm-hmm. It's a tongue twister.
Yeah. And then I think then Tony comes along and Tony has all of his idols. Again, I don't think there's too much idol stuff going on in Survivor Blood versus Water. I think Tyson is just like hoarding the idols and sort of in
his crotch as well, apparently.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, he started that.
He started the crotch idol thing.
And Tony is, you know, using idols effectively as sort of like the menace. The specter of Tony's idols turned out to be more powerful than Tony's idols.
Yeah. And it's funny because that you brought up like the Tony LJ playing the idols for each other as an example of like this risk taking thing. But I actually think the fact that they both ended up being safe takes away the power of playing it for another person. And the fact that they were both wrong also takes the power away from the moment.
Like, what are we doing this for? Let's not bring this idea up again.
Right. Well, and like, I think that it's less memorable. I mean, like that tribal council was really memorable, but not for the idols. It's memorable for different reasons.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting. And who knows where this ultimately goes from here? Like what is going to be the next genesis of this if we see this trend continue?
Right. I mean, I think that I think it's always going to depend on the person who finds the idol, because I think you're always going to have certain types of players who are always going to keep it secret and only play it for themselves. Like that's the Kelly Wentworth play, right? Kelly Wentworth is great at finding the idol, keeping it a secret. But only playing it for herself. And that game works for her. That's a playing from the bottom kind of a game. And that's not like I'm going to like build my army kind of a game.
Yeah.
And again, it just depends on the person and the season.
You'd play an idol for somebody else.
I would 100% play an idol for somebody else.
If you knew where the votes were going.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
I would even take a risk if I knew, you know, that there was like a high probability it was going somewhere, but I was not 100% sure it was going somewhere. Again, depending on the numbers and the situation and the people, I would play it.
Yeah. It's a very fun way that the same thing has sort of like changed the way, you know, the idol has the same power. But people are looking at it differently.
Yeah.
Okay. Very fun. Is this too boring? Was this too boring?
No, I love it.
Yes.
I don't know. I just wanted to say that I only like talking about Survivor with like three people in the world. And you're one of them. So,
well, this is very fun for me.
That's great for me.
Okay. All right. I have so many different questions for you about stuff.
Oh, gosh.
Let's go ahead. And okay. How about a question from our mutual friend, Humberto?
Yay.
In a season full of super fans, how important is it to be the first one to make a move? And when is it too early?
Oh, I don't think you need to be the first person to make a move. And I think too early, again, it depends on, I don't think that's an answerable question. I think, for example,
sorry, Humby.
I think David played his idol for Jessica. I liked that move. I thought it was great. I thought it was army building. Right?
Yes.
He ensured that he had an ally in the game who would stump for him and that somebody else that he couldn't really count on. I don't know that like Lucy was necessarily the best person they should have voted out. That said, like, I think he won over Jessica hardcore and that panned out for him post merch. That all worked out for him.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention he found the idol again. That said, I think things reset at the merge. So I think you can be making moves before the merge as long as, you know, you're still sort of in the numbers. But once you hit the merge, especially when you have 13 people, you don't want to be coming out, you know, like ahead of the game. Like, you don't want to be so far out ahead that everyone can just like stop and see you out there and take you out.
Okay. Lisa Elizabeth wants to know, what's your advice to Hannah to make it to the final tribal? We haven't touched too much on Hannah. Mm-hmm. You said earlier very quickly that you said that, I forget what was the word you used. Did you call her brilliant? You said, I thought you were complimentary.
Oh, I mean, I said that she's like an intelligent young woman.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Not brilliant. I called Adam brilliant.
Adam was brilliant. I'm sorry for getting them confused. Okay. So then do you feel like, is Hannah playing a game? Because that she has gotten farther than I thought she was going to. I really thought that she was in over her head. Here she is at the final eight. She's in the majority.
I don't think she's in over her head. I think, like I said, she's a smart girl. I think she knows what's going on. I think her problem is in the execution. And this is something that I actually noted in her pregame interviews as well, where she said, you know, oh, like people think that because I'm like quirky and neurotic and nerdy, that that's something I'm ashamed of, but I'm not. And I embrace it and I, you know, highlight it. And I, you know, and like she really leans into that persona. I think she leans into it too hard, so hard that people look down on her as a mess. She's like, you know, she makes herself seem like someone who desperately needs to be like carried and who someone can have in their pocket. And she doesn't come off, you know, commanding the respect that she deserves because she is smart.
Mm-hmm.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. How does she combat that? Or is there no way for her to combat that in this season?
So I think she's done a lot of damage to her image.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's so, so hard to come back from that. And I think the way to do it is by like big splashy moves.
Yes.
And like, even if she's like, you know, similar to Will last night, even if she's like the swing vote, I think people are still going to take ownership away from her and be like, oh, she was swayed to swing a certain way. It wasn't her own decision, unless it's like actually like an idol or an advantage, unless she gets like physical things in her hand that she has sole control over. And she, like Natalie Anderson style, says like, you all think this is going to happen, but I'm about to like set a bomb off and like just set like a couple of bombs off, like one after another.
Mm-hmm.
That's the, like, only a bomb can reset these people's perception of her.
Okay. And do you think she has that capability?
I think she's, I don't know that capability is the right word. I think she's capable. I think right now where she's at, I just don't see it happening. So I guess the answer is no. Mm-hmm. I think if she were to come back in a future season,
yeah,
she would be capable. I think right now, the way she's playing this season, I don't think she has self-awareness about like what she's putting out there. The fact that she's not well-regarded, the fact that she's caused herself to lose respect.
So from her position in the game, we talked about her potentially going with Will. And then we also talked about, you know, that she's with David and potentially Ken. Adam also played an idol for her. Which way do you think is better for her to go next?
I mean, honestly, like, I think the best person for her to join up with is Will.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I think Adam gained back a lot of respect last night. So aside from that, it seems like people have some qualms with him. So sticking with him would be good.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other person I'd say would be Ken. If Ken is like the, you know, sort of disaster that he proved to be last night, like, you know, I mean, he's a bit douchey. So
how's he douchey? What is he doing that's douchey?
Oh my God. Have you seen his Twitter account?
Well, let's leave it on.
No, I mean, like,
leave at Ken of the Jungles out of this.
QED.
Yeah.
Or Ken of the Jungles.
Yes.
Point made.
Yeah. All right. But is there something on the show that's upsetting you?
Yeah. I mean, like, okay. So like, let me, like, the little girl, referring to Figgy.
Yes.
And then like telling Jessica how it is, sweetie, they're all voting for you.
Yes.
Gross. His whole, I mean, everything last
he's
night.
He's not just being like folksy.
I mean, his like also his whole backstory. Do you know his like from pregame interviews? Like, or, yeah, the pregame stuff. Do you remember his backstory? His backstory was he lived in he moved to Hawaii to live off the land and be a surfer.
I believe he used the word a hedon
and slept with loads of women.
Whoa!
And then one of those women, like years later, called him up and was like, "Hey, you have a 4-year-old daughter." So he moved back to the U.S. and suddenly was
like a
changed man.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, I don't want to let's only concentrate on the Ken of the 39 days on.
Right. But
Fiji.
I think that like he's very he's so traditional and campy and integrity and like the entitlement of, oh, my God, they want to vote for me. Like I said, like it's
I'm not ready to go home now.
What? Yeah. Why? What? Why?
What did I do to anybody that they vote me out? Zeke called him an old school player. Now, I know as a student of the game, you like a lot of these old school players who may not have been like master strategists. Is there anything to him as being like a throwback that you could sort of get behind? Like, here's somebody in 2016 that is just only cares about who's working hard around camp.
The only thing that I really...
More like the good people around here.
The only thing that I liked about him was that he was willing to align with CC. Mm-hmm. Willing when nobody else was for, I don't know what reason. When he was willing to align with David when, you know, few people wanted to trust him. He was willing to align with these misfit type people that are typically first, second boot fodder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I like that about him. I like that he's willing to give anybody a chance, seemingly. Love that about him.
Yes.
It ends there.
Yes. Okay. This is a question from Mika, who wants to know, when will the game's idle meta change into you go for the obvious target instead of the least obvious target in, say, Hannah? Because yesterday, Adam played the idle for the least obvious. Obvious target. Now, we don't know if Adam was tipped off at all as to who to play the idol for, but it seems like that somewhere around, just to go back to our idol evolution conversation, probably around South Pacific, somewhere in between South Pacific and Cagayan, everybody knew, oh, okay, well, we'll always play the idol on the person. They're going to put the votes on the person who is the least obvious target. The Jeffra, the Whitney Duncan, that's who they're going to try to put idol, or that's where we presume the vote is going. Will it ever shift back to, oh, no, let's vote for the most obvious target because they won't play the idol for the most obvious target? Like, let's put all our votes on the threat because they won't think we're putting the votes on the threat. They'll play the idol for the person who's the least obvious threat because that's the now perceived correct move.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to say without being out there. Like, and it like reminds me actually of Heroes Villains when there was like a montage in this episode where it was like Boston Rob mentally, you know, like sparring with Russell where they showed like... They showed Rob saying like, you know what? Like, I think Russell has the idol, so we should really vote for Parvati. And then they go to Russell and Russell's like, he's going to think that I'm going to play my idol on myself. So they're going to vote for Parvati. So I'm going to play my idol for Parvati. And then they go back to Boston Rob and he's like, no. We just, you know what we need to do? He's going to play his idol for Parvati. He's going to know that we did this. Let's split the vote instead and do this thing. Mm-hmm. And it goes back to, and I think that's sort of like.
But nobody at that point is saying like, why don't we just vote out Danielle?
Yeah, but I think that's also like the...
Even I wouldn't use my idol on Danielle.
And I mean, that's like the sort of strategizing that like you need to be there for. You need to be out there for.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they didn't just vote for Ken. I don't know that Adam was necessarily tipped off because I think the only person who would have tipped Adam off would be Will. But if Will is tipping Adam off... then that means he already has Will's vote. So why does he play his idol at all?
Mm-hmm.
So I think if Will tipped him off, I don't think he plays the idol for the person Will says because he's going to assume Will is lying to mislead him
mm-hmm.
and then plays his idol for somebody else. I don't know. All that to say,
Speaking of playing the idol, Derek Boucher wants to know,
Boucher,
what was up with hashtag crotch idol? And why was Jeff like, yo, it's cool, here's my hand to give it to me?
So it's always been my dream to play an idol from my crotch.
Okay. Yes.
Because I feel like you're reaching down into your balls and you're just like, these are my balls, mm-hmm. and I'm playing it. I know. I think that like in Adam's case, he didn't bring his bag to tribal council because he had immunity.
Right.
So he had nowhere to put it that people, mm-hmm. you know, where people wouldn't see that he had it,
yeah.
you know, obviously. So of course he's going to put it in his crotch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jeff is, you know, like a very talented host of this show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not like, there's not like jizz on this idol. It was just like, it probably wasn't up against his actual genitalia, like the skin. You know, and like, whatever,
mm-hmm.
he'll go wash his hands after. Of course, he's going to put his hand out. Like, what's he going to do? Like, put it on my, like, he doesn't have a podium.
Right.
Like, put it on the voting urn. Just
yeah.
Right there.
I mean, there is the thing that he does, like that, you know, the thing that holds up the urn. He's not like holding the basket of votes. Well,
you know,
it'd
be amazing
hand.
If he busted out like the torch snuffer. Like, and flipped it over and said, like, put it in the cup of this snuffer.
Yes. Well, because Jeff has to, like, usually he's like, okay, this is an actual immunity idol.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't think it was, like, I don't think it's that gross, given that he's just going to go wash his hands afterwards.
Okay. All right. So, and you say I have even more respect for Jeff Probst now.
Yeah, I think.
Or for you, it was not that big a deal. Anybody would have been.
Yeah, I don't think it was that big a deal. Actually, no, and I'll tell you one thing that maybe a lot of people don't know. Jeff is incredibly OCD. Jeff.
I didn't know this.
Yeah, Jeff, when I was on, I think it was Worlds Apart, gave us this speech about how he hates handshakes. He thinks they're super outdated.
Fist bump.
Yeah, he thinks that like any physical touching is like super outdated.
Hey, Jeff, whatever happened to like a good old-fashioned handshake? Why aren't people shaking hands anymore?
Right. Like record players and the handshake.
Yeah.
And so I'm sure Jeff, when I saw that scene, I remembered Jeff's speech about how OCD he is. And I was just thinking, oh my God.
I feel like a lot of people in the public eye have that.
Do they? I don't know.
I don't know. I'm guessing.
Do you have that?
No, I'll shake hands with people. I don't care.
Yeah.
Just like a man of the people, shaking hands with everybody. Yeah. I'm more that my thing is, I don't know whether to give a hug or a high five or forget the soul handshake. I'm totally lost on that. A good regular handshake, I'm fine.
Yeah.
That's right down the middle, sweet spot.
Yeah. I prefer hugs and high fives, except with your son, Dominic. I did a handshake.
Yeah, he did a handshake?
Yeah.
Yeah. What, do you have a good grip? Or a lot of millennials, weak grip, they say.
A little weaker, but he was willing to, you know, put his hand out there. And that's what matters.
Okay. Peter Fenton wants to, are you as terrified of Will's voice as I am? Does Will have a scary voice? No.
Do you know who the Crash Test Dummies? They sang that song.
Yeah. There was this girl who...
Once there was this girl who got into an accident and couldn't come to school.
You said I thought you meant like the Crash Test Dummies, like from the commercial.
No.
Yeah.
No. Oh, before when I mentioned...
Yeah.
That's what I think of when I hear Will's voice.
Yeah. Was Will alive when that song came out?
No.
Probably not.
No, definitely
not.
You
don't know what that is. It's to Google it. I have that album on vinyl, Crash Test Dummies. I saw them at Woodstock 95. It was Woodstock 94, I think they did. I was shaking everybody's hands at Woodstock 94. Are you kidding me?
Is that like the year Will was born too?
Probably.
Like the year that song came out.
If that. Okay. So Michael Butler O'Rear Jr. wants to know, if you could steal a reward from any season ever, what would it be? Do you have one reward of all time?
Like, are we talking about like just an actual luxurious reward or like an advantage kind of a reward?
Anything. Anything. What's on your reward bucket list?
Okay, so my reward bucket, I remember like before I got on the show, the reward I always dreamed of getting was like these, like the Survivor All-Stars Spa Reward, where they went and got like a massage and face mask.
With, and
they got
with to, Rupert and Jenna Lewis and Amber.
And Amber. And they got to wash their hair. And when Amber came back, they were like smelling her hair or something. Yeah. That was like the luxury reward that I always wanted if I ever got on the show.
Yeah.
And then, but if I were ever going to steal,
I always thought it was kind of douchey that like Rob and Amber are just like reunited and then Rupert like took her on a reward like away.
All right, Amber, you're with me.
No, I love that he took two women because yeah. like that was such a bullshit challenge. We had to carry like a 200-pound chest and only men could do it. and then I love that Lex got so mad that Rupert didn't take him because again, like the entitlement, like, you know, add him to like the list of Ken and Rupert and Savage.
Yeah, well, you're not a Lex person.
I thought he's great TV.
Yeah.
I think that like he's,
super, I thought all Bay Area stuck together.
He's so entitled.
Love you, Bay Area.
So entitled.
Wow.
So entitled.
My mind is blown.
Shouldn't be. But, no, but if I were going to steal a reward, it would definitely be one of the advantages.
Well, it would be all time classic if you would steal Rupert's reward.
Who stole my reward?
Who the hell stole my reward?
That wasn't cool.
But I dig it.
Megan S., what is the deal with all the endurance immunity challenges this season? Oh, I didn't know that was going to elicit such a strong reaction from you.
Okay, so my season, my Worlds Apart season, the individual immunity challenges, like all of them had a balance beam component.
Mm.
And it's just like, it's not fun. It's not interesting. It's not fair. It caters to the same people all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like change it up, right? It's not entertaining to see the same thing every time. And then like in Cambodia, I felt that like a lot of the individual immunity challenges were also similar to the ones that we're getting now, where there's just like stand there and hold something and balance it and like stay still for a very long time.
Yes.
And I just think it's, again, it's boring to watch.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't like those.
And like, and it's one thing to sprinkle in like one or two, but to honestly have every single one be the same, I don't like it.
Okay.
Although I will point out that somebody different has won immunity every single week so far, which was also a quality of Korong.
Yeah, we had that in Korong as well.
Yeah.
Okay. This is an odd question. Marina wants to know, what are Shireen's thoughts on Jay's sister's outfit? It seemed to be a romper, which is not the most practical if she had to use the bathroom while she's on the island. I did notice that like, oh, she's like really dressed up.
I don't remember what she wore.
Yeah.
I feel
like she looked like she was like ready to go out.
The thing that I thought of was actually that her hair was so long and it was down and it was probably super hot.
Mm-hmm.
As somebody with long hair and who's been out there a couple of times.
Yeah.
Having your hair down is like it causes you to sweat a lot. It's very hot. Maybe she's not a sweater.
Yeah. I feel like that the normal family visit attire is pretty much like a t-shirt and shorts.
Yeah. And that's because they have,
they don't know what to be prepared for.
Well, it's because there are a lot of rules as to what they can wear.
Yeah.
So like they have to wear like a clothing with no labels or anything, with like solid colors, but mm-hmm. it can't be white or black. Like yeah. there are a lot of weird things. I don't know. I don't remember what she was wearing, but I thought she was cute. And like, look, girl can like, it's, you know, I think that she's a hustler and could probably pee no matter what she's wearing.
Whoa.
Wherever.
Yeah. I don't even know anything about a romper. So
I know girls who can pee in a urinal.
Whoa.
So.
Yeah, there you go. All right. Josh Wiggler wanted to ask, how would Shireen rank the remaining Survivor contestants in terms of Carla Hall hot sauce flavors from mildest Southern to hottest Boom Shakalaka? Is this something you share? Carla Hall? Is this like the third Hall sister?
Carla Hall is, I need to pull up like the list.
Mindy and Cindy's sister, Carla.
Carla is, do you watch Top Chef?
No.
Oh my God.
No. I know the guy's podcast about it.
Carla is the greatest Top Chef contestant of all time.
Yes.
She's an all-star, two-time Top Chefer.
Okay.
Chef Testant. And she has a Southern fried chicken place in Brooklyn.
Yes.
That Josh and I visited.
Okay.
And we met her.
Okay.
And basically the three of us all, and Josh's wife, we all fell in love with each other.
Yes.
And then we got married and then Whoa. We escaped.
Does Carla Hall watch Survivor?
She didn't know who you guys were from anything.
No, and like we didn't tell her either, but we did, like, we posted about like a photo with her on Facebook and tagged her in it, and she commented, and I took a screenshot just in case she one day ever deleted her comment.
Okay. Why is she good? She's the best cook, or she's a good personality?
So she was a really good cook, and she made it to the finals, I think, of both of her seasons, but she didn't win either one.
Because she screwed over too many people.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
But she was probably like the biggest person, one of the biggest reality TV personalities in a good and positive and lovely way.
Yes.
Funny.
Yes.
Of any reality TV show that I watch. And like, for example, like my favorite thing about her is when she and her husband go grocery shopping and they lose each other, like one of them will yell "Hootie," and then the other will respond "Who?" So "Hootie who" is like the, mm-hmm. "Hey Rob, are you out there? Hootie."
Mm-hmm. Who?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't sound that great.
You know what?
I mean, maybe it's lost in the translation.
It's lost in translation. Whatever. Anyway, I'm gonna rank hot sauce people. Okay. This is a hot take.
Yeah. There you go.
Jay is like Hottie McHotterson on the hot sauce scale. He is blowing my mind as a character. What a surprise.
Whoa.
Love him.
Yes.
Love him.
Wow.
You know
why? Why? What's so great about Jay as a character for you?
It all comes down to that stare down with Michaela,
mm-hmm.
and how he would not let go of her. Like, she was staring him down and he was not going to back down,
mm-hmm.
and he owned it so calmly and like wonderfully. And with,
yeah,
and like, you could see the compassion in his face. But it was so stone cold gangster of like, yeah, I did it.
Yeah.
And I just had so much respect for him in that moment, as both a human being and as a game player. Even though I didn't think it was a good move for him at the time,
mm-hmm.
but like, I thought he had sound reasoning and I thought that he executed.
It's worked out somehow.
It's somehow worked out.
Yeah.
I mean,
until 2 weeks from now when Will votes him out in the pendulum game.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
He'll have his idol. no, but like, so the reasons why I like Jay is that, Jay is like all the reasons why people love Ken are the reasons why they should actually love Jay. Jay looks like this like bro surfer alpha guy, whatever, who's actually really compassionate and kind towards almost any type of person that's remaining on the show. And mm-hmm. yes, he gravitated towards the, you know, grosser people, but, mm-hmm. But he still seems to get along with everybody. And, he's also like, he's actually a smart guy. And the fact that he was willing to put differences aside to, and brought Adam on that reward, you know, we were all rooting for them to like Jay didn't know about Adam's mom, but we all did. And we were fucking rooting for him to bring Adam.
Yeah.
And he did it. And he did it because he respected Adam, was able to put differences aside. I find so many people who get cast for the show are so arrogant or egotistical that like they can't put these things aside and do a good deed or extend an olive branch to an enemy and try to like, you know, get other things working.
Yeah, I really liked what he said to Adam. I don't remember the exact quote, but he's like, dude, sometimes I hate you, sometimes I love you, but come with me and let's go and have a reward together.
Yeah. And so that's an example actually of like, I don't think he did it strategically at all. I think he was doing it as like this, you know, bro to bro kind of a thing.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But I do think it actually was a very strategic move.
It was a very good job there. And yeah. I feel like we talked about this when I think it happened. I want to say that this is in Worlds Apart, and tell me if I have this right. Joe got to pick like a bunch of people to go on the reward, and he picked like a bunch of people that like the from like the opposite side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. He picked like Tyler, Carolyn. Oh, he picked Will as his like, you know, OG buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then he picked me last.
Yeah. You love all Wills on Survivor.
Mm.
Yes. Yeah. That's your favorite Survivor name.
It's my favorite.
Okay.
Wait, but and
oh, she'll go in the hot sauce.
Wait, so Jay, hottest of the hot sauces.
Yes.
And then followed very closely by David and then Adam.
Yes.
And then everybody else.
Yes.
Sunday is like, you know, medium. She's in the mild zone. And then everybody else is like
So that's interesting to me in terms of that. I'm surprised that like you have like, why is Sunday above so many people for you?
Because she seems like a good person, a compassionate person. She did that. The Ken Whisper.
Mm-hmm.
That was so slick. It was so good.
Yes.
And then
Zeke gave her a lot of credit on the exit interview today.
Oh, did he?
Yes. And I admit a mistake when I'm wrong. You know, I'm not one of these people that will do like revisionist history. Well, actually, what I meant by that was right. I don't do that, Shireen. I'll tell you when I get it wrong. And I was wrong on how coordinated Zeke's side was on that.
Oh, you thought that that was purposeful?
I thought it was like I thought that they were all just sort of like it's heat of the moment. And I actually on the first viewing, I didn't catch that that she told Hannah to vote for Ken because Hannah, according to Zeke, was with them. So she told her a incorrect name, even though she was supposed to be voting with them.
I thought that Zeke knew that Hannah was not with them, but it was like a bit of a gamble. And so they were going to throw away. It seemed to me like they it didn't matter if they threw away her vote because then it would still be 5-4-1.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that even what Hannah asked her was like, wait, what's the plan again? It's like, oh, wait, you know the plan. Stop it. Stop it. You didn't forget what the plan was.
Yeah, but you could see in that moment, Sunday stopped and like she hesitated before answering and like thoughtfully said Ken.
Yes.
I thought.
So that's a good job. So, all right, let's get back to one of these other questions. Amy from Maryland wants to know, now that Will and Zeke have come down with cases of big move-itis, how much could this be due to starting the game with 20 players, but not having lost any to medevacs or quits? There's a lot of players left, but we're pretty far in the game. I mean, is this the furthest that we're along and now we're at? We have 8 people left, and I feel like it's like day 31 or 32. I mean, by comparison, I think we were down to 6 people at this point in the Amazon. So it's still, we had a lot of people left out there. I mean, I don't know. Do you know, remember what the Cambodia, like, I think we're on the same trajectory.
I think we're on the same trajectory as Cambodia, which is unique. I think like Cambodia and this season are the only ones that have had like a 13 person merge with a 10 person jury.
Mm-hmm.
And where you're on, you know, day 32 with 8 people, like with 9 people still left in the game, the 9th person was just voted out on day 32. By comparison, on Worlds Apart, which started with 18 people, day 32 was the day that 7th place was voted out.
Okay. All right. So not too far off the pace. It feels more.
It's like, I mean, it feels like it's a couple people more than where they should be.
Okay. John Johnston wants to know, would you rather go to a Burning Man concert with Aris or WrestleMania with Russell? I don't know why. Which one?
Okay. So I guess it means like, they mean like a one concert at Burning Man or all of Burning Man?
I don't know. You should open that to interpretation. Aris said, I need to go to Burning Man.
Oh, he hasn't been?
No, he goes. He thinks I would like it.
Oh, he said you should go to Burning Man.
Yeah.
You would not like Burning Man.
Yeah, like, that's what
Aris,
I said.
Does Aris know you?
He thinks I would like it.
I feel like I don't even know you that well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm telling you, don't go.
What would you rather do? Have you been to Burning Man?
Yeah, I've been to Burning Man a bunch and I've been to WrestleMania once.
Yes.
I prefer Burning Man to WrestleMania, okay. But I had a great time. I have great times at both.
Okay.
And so then the question is just like Russell versus Aris. And then again, it's like, well, if it's like one day with Russell at WrestleMania. So WrestleMania, you have to understand, like, this is something that I just...
Russell might be really fun at WrestleMania.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. Because WrestleMania is all about, like, big production, like, big moves, TM.
Yes.
And it's about hamming things up. And Russell is, like, the ultimate ham. It's all about character.
I'm telling you, the Undertaker is going to win.
Him, like, narrating what's going on at WrestleMania... I actually think
they should call it WrestleMania.
Yes.
The whole world Ding. Had WrestleMania.
Ding yourself. There you go. Yeah. So I'm going to choose that one, actually.
I'm sure some of these divas. Yeah.
I'm sure ours would be fun at Burning Man too, but we won on this one.
Yeah. Okay. Jordan Kalish wants to know, are the chairs in Rob's studio comfortable? I'm not sure where that's coming from.
I honestly don't know where that's coming from either. That's not like some inside joke.
If it is, I don't know it.
I'll tell you, like, the chairs here are very comfortable. I mean, the only thing that makes me think of, which I don't think I've ever talked about publicly, was like at Tribal Council, the chairs are really uncomfortable.
Yes.
And so, like, and when Jeff goes off to, like, quote unquote, tally the votes, but he's really doing all this other stuff and, like, ordering them and stuff, you're sitting there for minimum half an hour while he's doing that.
Yeah.
And like everyone, people are like leaning over so that different parts of their butt are, you know, hitting the chair. Stump. And some people like are standing up and like massaging their butt and like, and all this is going down. And then Jeff comes back and reads the vote. But like tribal council is super uncomfortable.
Yeah. I feel like I would sit on like some of my stuff, like a hat or like, you know, different, like a part, a piece of my bag if I could.
Yeah. Honestly, that's actually like the smart thing to do.
Thank you. Thank you. I invented that.
You did.
No.
Trademark
it. Okay.
You should go back and play again and do that move and like you'll make Survivor history.
I'd like to have my hat seat. Yeah. then just talk to me about the tribal council with going to Rocks. Again, as somebody who a historian of all this stuff, what did you make of all that? The fireworks from last week.
Wow. Loved it. Oh, I have a hot take on that.
Good. Hot. What level hot sauce?
Oh, not quite Jay, but a David level hot sauce.
Okay. Not a David level hot sauce. So one level below Boom Shakalaka.
Yeah.
Okay.
Will and Jessica are the two people who are most likely to flip. Jessica, because everybody sees her as weak-willed and flimsy, and she was being very open about the fact that she didn't want to go to Rocks. And Will as well. Will clearly isn't, he's not that close with anybody, and he was also very open about the fact that he didn't want to go to Rocks for anybody. And so you want to get one of these two people to flip. And so I'm imagining that, like, if you're one of these sides, all of you ahead of time need to, like, pull Jessica in and be like, Jessica, I know you're freaking out. I know it's a tie, but lock it down. Pretend like you are going to Rocks. Even if you're going to flip on us, fine. But like everybody here, we're going to be stone faced and just say, we're going to Rocks. That's done. And what happens is Will sees that and Will is going to say, oh shoot, none of them are flipping their votes. I'm going to flip mine because I don't want to go to Rocks. That's
interesting.
That's how you get Will to flip his vote. Mm-hmm. Okay. But with Jessica freaking out like she was, everybody thinks she's going to flip her vote.
Yeah. So they had more confidence. They were more calm.
Yeah. And so what happens is, like, if you are Will and,
this is good stuff.
And you think
yeah.
Jessica is going to flip her vote, you don't flip your, this happened in Australian Survivor where two people ended up going up there and flipping their votes and you ended up with a tie again. And Will predicted this. He was like, if she's going to flip her vote, this crazy person. So
he could see into the future of Australian Survivor.
He could.
Yeah.
So he's thinking like, I'm not going to flip my vote if she is, because I don't want it to be a tie again. I want to do the thing that'll guarantee me not a Rock draw.
Yeah.
And so I kind of feel like her melodramatic nature where she's like sobbing at every turn cost her the game. I think that her lack of a poker face all the time is like, ironically.
Yeah.
What caused Will not to flip his vote and what caused him to go to the Rock draw?
Do you think that she should have flipped?
No, I think Will should have flipped.
Will should have flipped.
But again, like, I think that he made the right call that he thought that, I think it really looked like Jessica was going to flip.
Yeah. Let me get a little new age on you. Okay. Do you believe at all that in the law of attraction, that what we fear most will find us? If you think about what you don't want, that's what you get. If you think about what you want or you think about what you don't want, that's what you'll get. The person that didn't want the Black Rock the most got it.
I see it more as like, who is being the most melodramatic baby? Get that person out.
Yes.
I think Survivor God. I don't think it's law of attraction. I think it's like law of Survivor gods.
Yes.
You're like, we're sick of the expressions and she sobbed when she didn't win immunity.
Wait, I wasn't expecting this Jessica take coming out like 90 minutes into this.
I was just trying to hold it in.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Even last night when she came out on the jury.
David Bloomberg is going to send you a strongly worded letter.
No, David and I are bros.
Well, not after this.
Come on, David.
Yeah.
No, like even on the jury last night, first of all, she looked stunning. She was so beautiful.
Yes.
But then like when Adam played his idol, like the two super melodramatic people. Like, first the camera like shoots over to Jessica and she does her like bug-eyed face again of like, oh my God. And like, you're like, what, are you going to start sobbing again? Come on. And then, you know, same thing with, and then they, you know, go over to Hannah, and Hannah is also making some crazy face.
Yeah. Good reactions.
Okay. I mean, like, and let me qualify this. Like,
how were you on the jury? Were you a big reactor?
I was a big reactor, but let me tell you, like, the difference is that, like, I really appreciate, I've come to appreciate and love authenticity and genuine reactions. And
just like Ken.
I love authenticity.
No, I'm the Ken of this podcast. I'm the Rupert of this podcast. No, I mean, like, I think there's like over the top, and then there's like
OTT,
and then there's like fabricated OTT. Yep. And I think, I mean, and then there's also just like, I mean, like Jessica sometimes acts like people murdered her child. Like when she lost the immunity challenge to Will.
Yeah.
Like the camera went to her face, like afterwards, like it looked like she lost a child, and it's like, calm down. It's a game. If you're sobbing,
but isn't that authenticity?
It is. And so that's, so I'm saying with like the, sometimes Hannah's reactions don't feel authentic.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they do. And I love her when she's authentic, and I really don't when she's not. And I think that it reads like on camera. And then I think my issue with Jessica is not actually the authenticity thing. I think she is authentic. I think that she's just like really like melodramatic, doesn't even like touch it. Like it's like she's always acting like her child has been murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it is a game. Yeah. You've been treated like pretty well. Like, stop.
Okay.
I don't know where I was going. I don't know what the question was anymore. I'm sorry. Oh, the...
We were just talking about the Rocks. You were talking about, you're giving us your hot take on your Boom Shakalaka, that take on on the Rocks. All right. So you mentioned Survivor Australia or Australian Survivor.
Yeah.
I want to just circle this back. This weekend, I'm going to be talking with Nick Iadanza. Got a lot of bonus
coverage.
Is that
how you pronounce his last name?
Well, how would you pronounce it?
I would say Iadanza.
Iadanza?
Or Iadanza.
I don't know. I'm making him Italian. He's Nick Iadanza.
Italians wouldn't say Iadanza.
What'd they say?
Like Iadanza.
Iadanza. Okay, we'll ask him. Look, pronouncing anybody's last name, not my strong suit. We've already established this some time ago.
I love Nick.
Yeah, great guy. Great guy. We're going to talk with him about millennials versus Gen X. We talked to him about Australian Survivor. We're going to talk to him about this season of Survivor. He has a lot of stuff that he wants to talk about. Feels like a lot of parallels between his game and some of the stuff that's happened with Adam this season. Looking forward to exploring that with him.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to get, I have you here.
Yeah.
He was somebody who was subjected to the neutral box twist this season.
Yeah.
I want to get from you.
Yeah.
What you think is the correct answer. What is the solution to this puzzle? And just to remind the listeners, maybe who did not follow Australian Survivor. So what they did was the same twist that they did to open Survivor Season 30, Worlds Apart, the share the lie twist of they sent two people off and they went to go to a board and said, do you want a clue to the idol? Or do you want a small bag of beans? Or do you want the bigger bag of beans?
Yeah.
Still not a big bag of beans.
Yeah.
Okay. Shireen says she has the answer to this. She was going to tell me downstairs. I said, no, tell me on the podcast.
Yeah.
So let me have this and then we can compare notes with Nick, what he thinks is the right move.
I think often, especially in like the heat of the moment, the simplest thing is the best thing to do.
Okay.
And in this case, you take that small bag of beans and you just say, I had a choice to get a clue to an idol or to bring us this bag of beans. And I chose the beans.
Yes. But isn't that like what Mike and Dan Foley did?
They actually chose the bag of beans. They actually came back and said that lie. And people still sort of questioned them.
Yes.
But like it died down and went away.
Yes.
Because it was simple. And in their case, it actually was the truth. The fact of the matter is like the bag of beans was kind of small either way. And it's so simple and straightforward because like Survivor in the past didn't typically give you beans with the clue. It was either a clue or a bag of rice in the past.
Yes.
And in this case, the small bag of beans was the gimme. That was like the, we're giving you an out here.
Mm.
Say that you just took the bag of beans.
Yes.
That's it.
Okay.
And the giveaway is just like when there's a swap later on and people realize that there was a bigger bag of beans.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, super simple, super straightforward. I took the beans. I got us beans. Fine. You can question me. but I brought you beans.
Right. And you saw through it when So told you that
this
you
bullshit told- neutral box, like
the neutral option. Yes.
I just thought that was like, again, I mean, the reason why I thought it was like a particularly bad lie is because this show and Jeff Probst are all about making players squirm and
binary choices.
Yeah. Like tough choices.
Right.
They're not going to give you some easy out in the middle. They're going to say like, make some like big thing, like big selfish decision or big like team decision.
Did you like what Nick did in Australian Survivor? Maybe not the execution. Did you like the idea? No. I'm going to come back and give people a fake idol clue. I'm going to read a poem that I'm going to write a poem and read it to everybody and send people, you know, going off in the wrong direction.
I thought it was funny, but no, I didn't think it was a good idea because again, it doesn't make sense. Like, why wouldn't, if you're coming back and giving everybody the idol clue, I mean, they're sitting there thinking, no, but really, bro, like, why didn't you just give us the big bag of beans?
It was the Australian equivalent of the idol is definitely on the ground.
Right.
Right.
It's up in a tree, in the ground, buried somewhere. The idol could be anywhere.
Yeah.
Is that, did I do it right?
It's pretty good. It's pretty good, man.
I'm sorry.
Man, you need a, you gotta end on a man. Okay. Shireen, this was wonderful to talk about. Was there anything that we didn't get to talk about? I think you nailed it.
Nailed it.
Yeah. What's the hashtag? WrestleMania?
Oh, yes. I was like, I hadn't thought of a single hashtaggy thing.
Yes.
WrestleMania is totally.
The only other one I had was Adam Inclined. I feel like no. That, even though you are generally Adam Inclined.
Generally.
Yes. We'll go with WrestleMania.
Please.
All right. So what's next for you?
I'm actually going to be traveling a whole lot.
Traveling a whole lot. Where? Internationally?
Yeah.
Around the country?
I'm going to go to Cuba.
Cuba?
Yeah.
Why? You're allowed to do that now that Castro? I don't follow the...
Yeah. Actually, I have friends in Cuba right now. And what happened when Castro passed is that everything shuts down and the whole country is in mourning. So my friends are there intending to be on vacation and they have nowhere to go or nothing to do because everything's shut down.
Everything's shut down.
Apparently.
In Cuba, are people actually sad about Castro or they just have, everybody has to like act like they're sad?
I'm not equipped to answer that question. I have no idea.
You have no idea. Okay. No idea. What's in Cuba? What's there?
Well, I think that we're like at this turning point with Cuba where either it's going to like open up further and become like super touristy and change a lot over the next like 10 years. Or, you know, Trump is going to take power and like shut down the tour, like American access to it again.
Yes. Can people listen to this podcast in Cuba? Are there any people in Cuba that listen to RHAP? Or is it like sort of like a North Korea type thing where it's like they're like shut off? They're like.
I actually don't know. I even just
Let me know. Are they on Twitter? Are people on Twitter in Cuba? Or is it sort of like that's not allowed?
Okay. I really don't know. They even have two types of currency there, one specifically for foreigners and one for locals. And like for example, like as a foreigner, you're not allowed to spend local currency and vice versa.
Yeah.
It's very weird.
Yeah. Please forgive my naivete. I feel like I am intellectually curious, but just like, you know, lazy to go and like Google a bunch of stuff to find out the answers to these questions. So I do generally like I would like to know, but I'm not like dying to know enough that I'll like go and read a bunch of articles about this.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know these things either. That's why I want to go. I'll go and we'll learn firsthand.
Just real quick. What else are you watching on TV? Anything?
What am I watching on TV? Oh, I'm watching Westworld.
Westworld, yeah. Oh, wow. That's the most boom shakalaka take, I think, on this whole podcast.
I think it's just every episode is like an hour and a half.
Oh, no, I love it. I'm almost caught up.
And you get like one small little detail.
I love it.
The plot is so slow.
Yes. I love it. I'm almost caught up. Supposed to be watching it with my wife, but I've gone.
I'm sure you've gone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Way past that. I would do the same thing.
Yeah. So. But I'll watch it again. And
certainly wouldn't watch it a second
time. Oh, wow. I'm very surprised. I felt like that this is right up your alley.
No, I mean, I liked like one episode recently went quickly.
Yes.
But the rest of them have been super slow.
Is it too much that between, you know, Google and Yahoo, you know how the real sausage is made and you feel like, oh, it would never happen like this.
No, it's not that. It's just like, you know, it's not the technology or the realism or anything like that. It's just, I feel like it's just too slow. I feel like they need to move the plot along more quickly.
You know who else really doesn't like it?
Who?
Ken. Whatever happened to like real cowboys? Like, why do we have to have robot cowboys?
Ken doesn't
these
have
days?
A TV.
Yeah.
Please. He's busy frolicking on the beach.
Yeah. All right. Well, this was so much fun. It's always, I hope people enjoyed this podcast. I got to think that they did, right?
I, how could they not?
Yes. It's so nice when you come in here, we got to talk about, so many different interesting subjects that I felt like, were off the beaten path, but I felt like were very fun.
Yeah. I had fun.
Yeah.
I thought we did good.
More fun is on the way. Voicemail with Mike Bloom.
Mike Bloom.
We're going to get into all of the questions.
Yeah.
BBOTT finale. What would it take for you to watch BBOTT?
Honestly, I mean, I think.
Because you don't even like regular Big Brother.
No.
Yes.
I've never watched regular Big Brother.
Well, how do you know you don't like it?
Well, you specifically told me that I wasn't, that I would not like it.
I feel like you'd hate it.
Yeah. So,
but you really hate BBOTT.
So why would I watch it?
Yeah. Well, so you maybe just want to see how much, like, oh no.
No, I don't.
It's not as bad as I thought.
I don't do that kind of thing. Yeah. I cut things off quickly.
Okay. Finale is tonight, and Jordan Parhar has a live coverage of that. I'll be back with coverage of the finale on Friday. A couple other bonus podcasts this weekend. I will be speaking with Matt Cerrone, creator of MetsBlog.com, one of Shireen's favorite baseball sites references. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm going to talk with him on Friday. That's a bonus podcast. Nick Iadanza.
Yes.
Yes.
Woo, woo, woo. Can we ding him?
Whoa.
Love him.
That he's going to join me on Saturday. Have that up for you over the weekend. And then we'll go back around the horn, Wiggle Room. Why Zeke lost with David Bloomberg. Looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Feel like that's going to be.
Don't
some...
let David Bloomberg shit talk me just because I was critical of the melodrama. Is like, does he love, like, what's his deal with Jessica?
He's a big fan. Some would say even Jessica Lewis apologist. Yes, it said 100% she made the right move.
But you know what though?
What?
I love champagne with salt and vinegar chips.
Okay.
It is delicious.
So maybe this is something that you got this in common.
Yeah.
Now you can build the relationship from there.
Yeah. Okay. We just need to teach her a little something about appropriate levels of reaction.
Okay. That's all good points. Anybody doing the holiday shopping over the weekend or beyond, robinswebsite.com/Amazon. Lots of great deals.
So many good deals.
So many good deals.
I was just on there yesterday.
Wow. And you're already doing holiday shopping?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah.
For everybody. Did you actually find something?
Yeah. Glow in the dark shoelaces.
That's a Christmas gift.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. A Secret Santa gift, or that's just.
It's like a stocking stuffer.
Stocking stuffer. Yeah. I am overwhelmed. I haven't gotten anything for anybody.
Mm.
That's it.
I'll get there.
RobAzawebsite.com/Amazon. Yes. Thank you very much. And yeah, I'll be panicking on like December 21st, getting like extreme rush shipping of like anything that I, but don't be like me. Don't wait till the last second. Every year it happens. Terrible.
They sell squatty potties on there too.
Yes. Yes.
Hat tip.
I have one.
Do you have a bamboo one?
No. No.
Then you are not a real squatty potty.
No.
Fan.
No, I'm not.
That's like my go-to gift for most people.
Squatty potty. Wait, you swear by it?
I swear by it. Yeah, I sent, like, if you can tell, like, if you're a really good friend of mine, I've sent you a squatty potty.
Okay, well, I guess I know where I stand.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
No, but I fly down and visit you, so that's like a different kind of.
Well, I appreciate it.
I didn't send you a squatty potty, I sent you me.
Yes, even better. All right, take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.